'Tis the season for snap elections. Let's see, you got the UK, France, and Iran, where if you've got the aging Supreme Leader urging citizens to get out and vote, you can only guess that what is at stake most is turnout. We'll ask if there's more than meets the eye to a heavily vetted presidential contest precipitated by last month's death of Ebrahim Raisi in a helicopter crash. To stop the sliding abstention rate, this time organizers have allowed what's billed as a reformist to stand alongside five hardliners. They include regime heavyweights, who, in the land that invented chess, each has his own agenda and strategy. So what kind of a snapshot will Friday's vote offer for an under-sanctions regime that's for now put a lid on the women, life, freedom protests of 2022 and cozied up to sometimes rival Russia? How far does this showdown go with an Israel whose leadership wants to dial up fighting with proxy militia Hezbollah in Lebanon? And, of course, the United States, that's at least until that other election, one that's coming up in November, trying to keep a lid on it all. Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at Iran's unexpected election. With us from Istanbul, Borso Dargahi, senior fellow at the Atlantic Council think tank. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
From Washington, Iranian-American journalist and commentator Nigar Mortazavi. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Sepideh Farsi is director of the award-winning animated film The Siren. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And activist Kian Habibian, co-founder of We Are Iranian Students. Your group, what is it, French students?
So it's based on a group of international students. We are registered in France, but our activities are international.
International. Thanks for being with us. Listen, like, and subscribe to the France 24 debate on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other fine streaming services. When Ebrahim Raisi was elected in 2021, moderates were banned in that vote. Turnout fell to a record low at the time, 45% for a presidential election. Now, with just a six-week campaign, is it enough to drum up enthusiasm? Authorities staging no fewer than five televised debates, last one held earlier this Tuesday, enough to convince voters to head to the polls? Well, the Supreme Leader hopes so.
The Islamic Republic has enemies. One thing that helps the Islamic Republic overcome its enemies is the elections. If a good turnout is seen in these elections, then it will make the Islamic Republic proud. Some politicians in our country believe they must know how to use this power or that power, and it's impossible to progress without sticking to famous countries and powers. Some think like that. Or they think they always know how to progress and pass through America. No, such people can't run the country well.
Who's he talking about, Borso Dargahi, in the last part of that clip?
I mean, there was many things he said. Some of them were obscure. Some of them were lost in translation. But I would say that when he calls on Iranians to vote, he's not actually calling on all of them. He's calling on those people who are in that crowd that he's speaking to get out there and vote. Specifically, he wants them to vote for one particular candidate. He wants them to vote for Saeed Jalili, who is I mean, this guy is so hardline and such an ideologue. He makes Raisi seem a little bit moderate. So I think that, you know, he would be fine with ordinary people not voting as they have been voting in recent
years. Saeed Jalili, the former nuclear negotiator, has he openly endorsed Jalili?
No, but just what he said right now, when you had him saying about some politicians think that all roads lead through America. And what he's referring to is some of the moderate and conciliatory comments that some of the politicians made during the debates. For example, Ghalibaf, the former mayor of Tehran, now the Speaker of Parliament, said that, you know, hey, you know, compromise is a form of resistance as well. Negotiation is a form of resistance. And he's trying to steer his flock, the ones who will definitely vote, to vote for Jalili versus the other hardliners.
Negar Murtazavi, spoiler, the panelists on the set here, they're not going to be voting. They're not convinced by what they just heard from the Supreme Leader. Your thoughts listening to that speech?
Oh, well, I agree with Borzu that what we're seeing, not just from the speech, but this is also following the slate of candidates, is that the regime wants higher participation than the last time, which had the lowest. We saw the lowest participation in the history of Islamic Republic in the previous presidential election, but not too high, not too competitive. So they let one reformist pass through the approval process, who I think the system has also decided they can live with him. So they have given Pezeshkian a chance to possibly win and become president. And another message I'm hearing in the Supreme Leader's comments is that if you do in fact win the reformist, don't bag too much on trying to talk to the U.S. or return to JCPOA and these kind of things, which we've seen as a very important point or key point that the reformist has been emphasizing during the debates.
Yeah, that reformist, 69-year-old former health minister Masoud Pezeshkian, he favors a return to the negotiating table with U.S.-led nuclear powers, with powers over the nuclear deal, rather. Let's take a quick listen to what he had to say in one of those earlier debates.
Just the way we can talk to each other. We can also learn to talk to our neighbors and the rest of the world. We cannot fight everyone. We should not fight. We should not show aggression to others.
Negar, you're saying he's got an actual chance of winning?
Well, the polls show he's had a steady growth, a slow growth. Right now, I saw a poll from today that he's actually the highest as far as the votes, around just over 30%, with the other two following just under 30%. I think he has a chance of going to round two with a low participation and then potentially a path to win. But again, he is competing against voter apathy. He's competing against participation. The higher the participation, the more in a basket of Pezeshkian, which has been the main challenge for the reformists.
Do you agree at this point in time, Sepide Farsi, that anything's possible when it comes to the outcome?
Well, anything is possible, but the end result is the same, meaning that even Pezeshkian has vowed, you know, and declared his faith, and he has said, I will do whatever the Supreme Guide says. So, frankly, the difference, the latency between the, you know, the far conservative right and Pezeshkian, who's the so-called reformist, is not that much, whoever the winning person is. What they want, I think, what Khamenei wants is really a high participation. And then, you know, within the realm of the possible for a president in Iran, doesn't matter if it's him or another one.
You heard the other panelists say high, but not too high, because they don't want the reformists to win. Do you agree with that, or you're saying it doesn't matter, even if he does win?
I think at the end, it doesn't matter. What counts most is the participation level. But of course, they would prefer Jalili to win, or eventually Ghalibaf, you know, he's been a candidate many a times, and eventually he's kind of pushed out at the last minute every time. So it's always a kind of a mysterious, chess game.
A mysterious chess game. Before we talk about Halibam, the Speaker of Parliament, Kian Habibian, first of all, if there is a second round, does interest among those who are apathetic, who don't want to go vote, does it go up a little bit? Does it become more interesting? Is it...
Not just like Sepide said, the outcome is going to be the same for the people. I mean, when we heard about the news regarding Raisi's death, the first thing that happened is the Supreme Leader giving a speech saying that no need to worry, everything is under control. And the message is quite clear. The power is held within his hands, and he's the one taking the decisions. So whether the president is a reformist or a conservative is not going to change anything. The decisions come from him, and all the decisions are made to protect the Islamic Republic.
Borzoi Dargai, do you agree that it makes no difference who the president is?
I mean, in the end, on issues, it does have an effect, actually. I mean, and we've seen that historically. You know, the Rouhani presidency was very, very different from the Ahmadinejad presidency, and the Ahmadinejad tone, the relations with the West. And the Ahmadinejad era was very different than the Khatami era. And there was differences on the street. That difference, that space between, what a president is able to do and what the reality on the street is has narrowed, I would think, in recent years, over the last decade or so. There's less and less flexibility about what difference a hardline versus a reformist president makes. But I think historically we have to concede that there have been differences.
Kian, do you take the point?
Yes, there are some differences, but there is also a consistency within the repression that the people face. Mm-hmm. I mean, the job description of the president of the Islamic Republic of Iran is to apply the directives decided by the supreme leader. And whether it is Khatami, whether it is Ahmadinejad, Rouhani, any president has repressed its people. In 1999, 2009, 2019, every time people died because they were asking for a better economy, for the respect of their fundamental human rights, for the protection even of the environment. And people still die, whether the candidate or the president is a reformist or a conservative.
All right. Earlier you heard Sepideh mention one of the candidates, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. The Speaker of Parliament, former head of the Revolutionary Guards, Mohammed Bagher Kalibaf. Let's take a listen.
We will carry on this path of improvement. You have to make an effort, and then it is on us to respond to your efforts. If I'm lucky enough to be at your service, and to never use excuses.
Kind of a strange pitch, Sepideh. He's saying, I'm at your service, but you have to come to me as well. I don't understand quite what he means.
He is an ambiguous talker, I would say. I was just reading about a kind of a strange quote of him saying that he mentioned that about swimming pools that could be, twin swimming pools. It seems anecdotic, but still it shows something that they're trying to really refurbish their images, that he said that I will make twin pools where the families can go together, and then only at the pool men and women will separate. And he even had a lapsus talking about a man and his husband, and so they people made fun of him, saying that he's given a hint to the LGBTQ. but I would say the fact that as Nigar was mentioning, I agree on that point, that the fact that they've allowed a reformist to be a candidate, because last time it was not even the case, it is to kind of warm the water a bit more and, kind of push some people who would never vote, maybe to do at least an attempt to vote. And I'm pretty sure that he would go to the second round, and that would even, heat the fire even more for the participation part of it. At the end, though, we reach at the level that, although I do agree with the Borzoi that yes, there were differences between Khatami's mandate and Rouhani's mandate and Ahmadinejad, but those days are long gone. I mean, we are in a severe repressive phase. I mean, people are dying. Two young filmmakers died in the past weeks, mysteriously. We don't even know how that happened, So, I mean, the repression is really, really severe. So they really are playing those, two kind of... on one hand, the whole country is really crushed, or movements, social movements. On the other hand, they're trying to play kind of like all of the candidates have brought their daughters to talk about their fathers. All of a sudden, Ghalibaf's daughter and Zakani's daughter have been on TV mentioning their father's past lives.
Which can sometimes backfire, by the way. Ghalibaf's come under scrutiny on social media First is what Farsi language Instagram has called baby shower gate. Daughter Mariam allegedly embarking on quite the expensive shopping spree in neighboring Turkey. That's on top of a successful campaign in Canada to deny his son, Eshag Galibaf, permanent resident status there. Hard to say if it's coincidence of the calendar, but last week Canadian authorities announcing they were replacing the Revolutionary Guard on their terror group list. To be fair, the Galibafs are not the only children of the regime insiders who like to chalk up the air miles. Canada is not the only country that welcomes what The Economist calls, in a nod to the T-Rex song from 1972, the children of the Iran's revolution, who still wants to go west. Borzu Daragahi, what's the attraction of Turkey for those children of the revolution?
Oh, I mean, it's easy. Turkey's especially the big cities and the resort places are just extremely high quality in terms of food and so on and amenities. It's also easy to come in terms of visas. I mean, that's the main thing. You know, Iranians can travel to Turkey without a visa. And so that is a draw. Many Iranians speak some Turkic language as well as Persian. And, you know, that is applicable here. You can use some of the, at least you can count and haggle over prices, and understand the numbers systems, because everyone speaks a little bit of Turkish in Iran. So it's, the attraction is clear. And you know, frankly, it's a little bit cheaper than Europe.
These children of the revolution, are they going into politics or not at all?
I think some will. I think it's, you know, it's like the, it's like, I'm sorry, I was watching reruns of The Sopranos, but it's really like the mafia. Some of the kids end up, you know, taking up the family business, and some try to find their own way.
You got Mortazavi, some even wind up in Canada and the United States.
Well, they do. It's also the hypocrisy, something that the Iranian, the younger generation keeps referring to, that especially the more hardline ones who've had this anti-American, anti-Western slogans and policies, people like Jalili or Ghalibaf, who really brought the country to this isolation from the West, then you see the hypocrisy from their own family members, sometimes even themselves, some of these officials who end up in the West, either shopping or living or vacationing, as Borzu was saying. So that hypocrisy is also something that the population, the new generation especially, really points out to, that they're saying, you're holding the country back, the economy back, we can afford this. But at the same time, you go around and do the opposite with the kind of wealth and resources that you amass.
Ken Habibian, you're born in France. Your parents emigrated from Iran. What happens with people from your organization? They must rub elbows with some of these people sometimes, you know, when they're taking university classes, when they're in nightclubs. What's it like? Is it just, is it another generation and we shouldn't judge them for what their parents do? And
well, I mean, it's kind of complicated to to judge these things. Not all children are responsible for the crimes committed by their parents. But we also see that, just like Sepide said, some of these people in the regime use their children to promote their ideas or their ideology. So, in our case, we try just to remain careful who we work with. And otherwise, in terms of justice, we just let the authorities judge the people if they've committed crimes. And in the case they haven't, then I guess they're just like any other civilian.
There's a case here in France that's come under scrutiny on that score. His name is Bashir Biazar. He's not a top official, but a former official at state television in Iran, who seems to have drawn the attention of French authorities with some virulent anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian tweets. He was arrested on June 3rd. French newspaper Le Monde reports there was an expulsion decree issued by the Interior Ministry, accusing Biazar of being, quote, an Iranian agent of influence linked to the intelligence services of Iran. What's this all about, Kian?
So from the information that we have, we know that a complaint has been filed, and some lawyers want to sue this person for the crimes that he has committed in France. So I think...
What crimes are these?
So he's accused of torture against French civilians. So he and other actions that actually I don't have all the details. But what I know is that the complaint has been filed, and that we are waiting for the lawyers to judge that person for the crimes he committed on the French territory.
Right now, we don't know much. And so I ask the question, I'll put it to you, Sepideh Farsi. Is he a bargaining chip? Because there are still three French nationals being held in Iran in what's often been blasted as a hostage diplomacy on the part of the regime. Is this a bargaining chip, or is this person really committed crimes, or what do we know?
It's hard for me to say, as Ken was mentioning. I do not have that much of information about Biazar's case. By the way, his name means harmless, which is also kind of an amazing coincidence, but or maybe not. I wouldn't think that on the French side, arresting him would be a bargaining, premeditated as a bargaining chip, or strategy for the hostages, French hostages kept. But at the end, we know that it might happen. Yes, of course. We have the case of Hamid Nouri, who was convicted in Sweden and who was exchanged against two Swedish citizens last week. So it could happen, yes. Now, the new element in this election is also that people do refer openly to the past crimes. In the case of Pour Mohammadi, he was a judge issuing death sentences for many dissidents in the 80s. And I just saw an interview on TV, Iranian TV, openly. The journalist was asking him whether he reckoned that he had issued death sentences. And he said, oh, I was just a judge. I did issue some sentences, but I also forgave many people. So, and this is a really new element, because nobody dared ever talk about those killings. We're talking about several thousand of people being sentenced to death in the 80s. And the other thing which is also interesting is that the former candidate, reformist candidate Mousavi, has kept silent. He is in house arrest, but he could have issued a statement.
He was the candidate favored by the street in 2009.
Exactly. Tajzadeh also equally, repressed because he's in jail. He has also kept silent. Nagesh Mohammadi, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, has boycotted from the prison, has said, no, do not. But some reform. So it's a very kind of a shaky tango that they're dancing now.
Let me ask you a quick question before I turn it back to the others. I'll put it to you, Kian Habibian. Last week we had the news of the commuting of a death sentence for the rapper Tumash Saheli. Is that linked somehow to the elections?
Well, it can be linked. Actually, the regime uses every lever it has to show some sympathy to the international community, show that... For example, here, the Supreme Court overturned the decision. So the intention could be to show that there is a justice system that is working in Iran. But when we take a closer look, we see that it's actually quite complicated and that each judge is trying to be the law for himself. So one of them is going to issue death sentence. The other is going to give just 8 years of prison. And the danger still remains for too much. And we need to keep pressure, because overturning this decision doesn't mean that we've won. We will win the day he comes out of prison and the day he can speak freely again.
Negar Mordozavi, on that score, the if you could say that, if I push the analogy or the theme music from all this, is we had the legislative elections back in March. There again, there was a record low turnout, officially 41%. But these are the first presidential elections since the Women, Life, Freedom a movement, which was met with a severe crackdown. Your thoughts on the commuting of this this death sentence, and whether this is just a little ellipse until after Friday and Election Day?
Well, I agree with Kian. I think there was also a lot of international pressure, international outcry to the sentence, the death sentence. So we've seen in the past that sometimes they do actually respond to this kind of international pressure and putting the spotlight on someone who gets these kind of sentences. And also, we can't ignore the fact that this is election season. So all of these I see as connected. Again, voter apathy is the main issue here. Participation is a little bit higher than the previous presidential election. That was 40-something percent. Now polls show about 50%. So it is a very, I would say, at the least, divided society, very polarized, even as Sepide was saying, among the reformists. The former president of Khatami put a statement endorsement to the Iran Zarif, seem to be endorsing Zarif, but there are also other reformers who have either not endorsed Zarif, remain silent, or civil society leaders like Nargis Mohammadi and others who have outright said they're going to boycott. So I don't think all of this is going to create the kind of excitement that we've seen in some of the previous elections with Rouhani or with Khatami, but I think regime also wants to come out of the kind of apathy and disinterest of the previous election, which was
and they've gone far on that score. Mm-hmm. Negar, I've read that you can even vote in the United States, even though there's no diplomatic relations between Iran and the U.S. You can go to the sections interest of the Pakistani embassy to vote.
That has always been the case, yeah. For the presidential election, any Iranian living anywhere in the world can vote, and there are dozens, about 30 polls, I think, across the U.S., some in Europe, depending also on the local laws of each country. Here in the U.S., you can have these kind of elections. Some of them are set up at hotels.
Do you know people who are going to go vote? Section.
I do. I do some here in the U.S., at least more than the last time, the previous presidential election. I think we see a little more excitement among the diaspora, but definitely not very major. And they're also
Who is voting? What kind of what's the profile of somebody who says, yeah, I want to take part in the vote?
Well, people who either support the system and happen to live outside, which that population also exists, or people who are sort of on the fence, so we call them the gray voters, people who still have a little bit of hope. When I talk to diaspora members saying, you know, we know that major change is not going to happen, but it still matters who is president, even though it's marginal. It's not the top person in power in Iran, not even number two. But he's an important person. The president is Iran's face to the world, and it really matters to someone like Ebrahim Raisi or some Khatami or Rouhani.
Borzo Dargai, do you know Iranians in Istanbul who are going to go vote?
Look, I would just say, you know, Iranian elections are weird. It's really easy to vote. You can just show up at a poll, you know, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon after sleeping all day, Fridays are days off, and vote. Oftentimes in the last 48 hours before the election, there'll be like social media surges for one candidate or the other based on, you know, one candidate dropping out and so on. And I would just have to say, do I know people who are to vote? Maybe I'll go vote. Maybe I'll go to the Istanbul consulate and vote, depending on what the vibe is in that last 48 hours before the vote. And why would someone like me vote, or someone like Negar possibly vote, you know? And I can say that because I'm friends with Negar. Just because we want to throw a wrench in the system, you know? I mean, because we want to create trouble. And, you know, someone like Saeed Jalili is not a troublemaker. He's going to be a bootlicker. Whereas someone like Ghalibaf or, you know, Pezeshkian, they have ambitions of their own. They're kind of real politicians with real agendas, and they want to leave a legacy. They're doers, or at least Ghalibaf was. He's a guy with like ambitions and dreams and wants to leave his mark. And he might be a little bit more uncomfortable, and there might be a little bit more friction with him and the supreme leader over which direction the country would go.
Kian Habibian, are you convinced by what you're hearing?
Well, as I said, I'm not going to vote because we've heard the supreme leader saying that any vote...
So you don't think throwing a wrench in the system works?
No, because even the reformists are jokes in Iran. If we look at Pezeshkian, for example, he takes pride in being a member of the IRGC. He supports their international actions. He's second hand in the elections. He's the one responsible for the internet shutdown in 2019. Zarif, who is also one of his supporters, was one of the responsibles from the bloody November in 2019. This same government was also responsible for the flight PS752. So I don't see why I would vote for them, even though there was an option for a reformist. What is going to change? Because they all have something in common. They said that our red line is the word of the supreme leader.
And the women life freedom protests, again, that's happened since the last time there was a presidential election in Iran. Iran, which after 2015, growth took off when there was the nuclear deal. But since Donald Trump pulled the plug on that 3 years later, the pain was felt. Both, if you can see, these are the statistics for oil production and exports in the last 20 years. Both in state coffers, the pain was felt, and in the pockets of ordinary citizens. Last month, during funerals for Ebrahim Raisi, France 24's Andrew Hillier reported from the northeastern city of Mashhad.
This is Mashhad, Iran's second city, home to one of the most revered sites in Shia Islam, the Imam Reza Shrine, burial place of the eighth Shia Imam. It's a big draw for Shia pilgrims from around the world, particularly from neighboring Iraq. Iran's galloping inflation has made it extremely cheap for Iraqi tourists to spend their money here.
The cost of living has gone up compared to before, but the dollar exchange rate is favorable to us. Before we exchanged $100 for 1.3 million riyals, now we get more than 5 million.
For Iranians, a very different picture. People here say there's nothing they can do but hope for a better future.
They say there aren't any problems, that the economy is fine. But we can see it everywhere, we can feel it. Our young generation is going to waste. Those who can leave Iran have already left. Those of us who have nowhere to go have to stay and bear it.
Yes, it's tough. The cost of living crisis is a big issue. I hope things will improve in the future.
Ebrahim Raisi, laid to rest here in his hometown, was elected in 2021 on a pledge to lift Iranians out of poverty. But under his presidency, the economy didn't improve. Iran's clerical rulers vet the candidates vying to replace him on June 28th, meaning big change is unlikely.
I'll take part in the elections out of respect for Ebrahim Raisi. I'll vote for someone similar to him who also carries on his policies.
Years of sanctions have battered Iran's economy, and it means that in the upcoming presidential elections, there can be no doubt that the cost of living crisis will be one of the biggest issues on voters' minds here.
Sepideh Farsi, your thoughts seeing those images from Mashhad and seeing how, you know, people, again, this was filmed last month, so it's people were a little bit conflicted about the whole electoral process when they look at what's in their pocketbook.
Exactly. Life has become much harder economically, let aside politically, but just in terms of money and the power of purchase power, it's much harder on the ordinary people. So I have a feeling that when I listen to them, they do. Meaning, as a citizen, you cannot come there and openly say, "Hi, I'm against the regime," and you know they obviously
they're filtering.
They're filtering, and it's very dangerous. I mean, none of them would dare speak openly against the regime. First of all, but secondly, they do. You do feel that they are struggling. You do feel that.
Some, I mean, they seeing
said
it.
That, yeah, they say it, that much they say, and so I still can't. Cannot forget the mysterious death of Mr. Raisi. I mean, the accidental, you know.
You don't think it was an accident?
I'm a filmmaker, you know. I know how you make films and how you write stories. I'm not saying that it wasn't an accident, but it could definitely be a non-accident, you know. Let's not forget that Mojtaba Khamenei's son, is a pretender to replace his father. His father is getting older, he's sick. He might pass away any time during this mandate, this coming mandate. And Raisi could have been a pretender to the Supreme Guides, or at least being part of that, you know, council. None of these upcoming presidencies. So, you know, you kind of tend to think of other scenarios, and Mojtaba Khamenei is casting a shadow that is not negligible.
Borzo Dargahi, could there be a conspiracy, or is it simply that, well, Western sanctions killed Ebrahim Raisi. After all, this was an aging American helicopter he was flying in.
I mean, brain drain means that even not just doctors and engineers leave the country, but the smart head of protocol that would not have put all those important people on one crappy helicopter. The smart weather forecaster who would have been working for the presidency, advising them that it was too dangerous to travel. I mean, you can look for conspiracies, but the rot at the core of the regime, the undeniable. Why look for conspiracies when you can see just how bad the regime is and how it in its efforts to sustain itself, it's rotting the country from within.
Power struggle is perhaps true. I mean, there's been reports of jockeying for position, Borzou, for years now. What with the Supreme Leader, he's 86 years old?
Guy seems in pretty good health to me. I mean, I've heard the reports that, I've been hearing for 20 years that, he's not in good health, but he doesn't seem that unhealthy to me.
Negar Mordozavi, this presidential election, are part of the stakes a certain amount of jockeying for position or not at all when it comes to, after all, it's clerics that will decide the next Supreme Leader?
No, there are no real candidates for succession. Ebrahim Raisi was actually a candidate for succession, and there was a path being cleared for him to be president for potentially 8 years and be prepared if the death of the Supreme Leader comes, which is what the president shows. The Supreme Leader himself was also a president before and then became Supreme Leader. But no, I think I see this really from evidence. This was an accident. And that's what actually some of these voters and some of the reformers are saying, that an opening has presented itself. This could be a potential chance or opportunity for a change or a shift, a small one. Even the reformers themselves are acknowledging that the change is going to be marginal, but they're saying, please come and vote even for this marginal change, because it matters who becomes the president. Do you want a repeat of the past 3 years, or do you want the kind of growth that you saw under Khatami, or sort of the rubbish on the...
And to get there, you would need some kind of an easing of these Western sanctions, right? So at this point in time, especially with the prospect of a Donald Trump returning in November, that seems very highly unlikely.
Definitely. Sanctions have actually been a very main theme of the debates, not just on foreign policy, but also on economy. Even when they talk about domestic policies, they all keep going back to sanctions. And interestingly, even the hardline candidates, those poor hardliners, keep talking about sanctions relief. It's just how they want to do it, and the method and strategy is different. But yes, it is very important, and I don't know how likely it would be if Donald Trump becomes president. There are many ifs, but it's definitely a major theme because it ties directly to the bad shape of the economy.
When you speak with people and your young people in your organization, Kian Habibian, what do they say on this? Because, the sanctions are hurting those people interviewed on the street in Mashhad. They're not hurting, as we were discussing earlier, the children of the regime insiders.
Well, we've seen a statement, actually two statements, from the youth of Iran. One of them has been published by a group of Iranian activists, which is basically calling everyone not to vote, because every vote would be a treason to the bloodshed by the people before them. And also they presented all the crimes committed by the candidates. There's a second statement that has been released today by more than 500 professors and academics, also calling all the people to not vote in these elections because they have committed crimes and they are not expecting anything from them. And at least that's the message of the youth. And we know that in terms of demographic, they are the majority of the country.
Borzou Dargahi, how much will foreign policy weigh on this election? We're speaking at a time when Israel is talking about going all in and fighting Iran's proxy in Lebanon, Hezbollah. Is this something that's on the mind of citizens in Iran?
I don't think that is the main concern that they have, the foreign policy issues. that is, you know, they are what they are worried about, as has been pointed out, is the impact of those foreign policy decisions on the economy and their daily lives. It, you know, I mean, why blame the U.S. for, you know, not selling the Iranian government new helicopters? Maybe the Iranian government should upgrade its foreign policy so it's not so alienated that it can't even buy decent helicopters. So I think that, you know, that is how foreign policy is impacted the elections right now. But I would also say that even on the issue of foreign policy, in the past, it has mattered who is in, you know, the presidency. When you had Saeed Jalil as the foreign minister, I mean, Iran's relations with the West hit an incredible low. Meanwhile, when you had, you know, Zarif with all his flaws and yes, all of his crimes, these are all criminals. But, you know, to me, I look around that the Middle East, I look around that region. I've been to almost every single country in the Middle East. You know, who is not a criminal in this part of the world? You know, what leader does not have blood on their hands? So, you know, as a vote, I don't see voting as a kind of act of purity. I see it as a strategic move. And, you know, when it comes to foreign policy, that has the tone and the impact of foreign policy has differed president to president.
So word on this, Sepideh Farsi, before we go, is what's going on at the border between Israel and Lebanon? Does that matter for what's happening on Friday in this election?
I do agree on that point with Burzu. No, it doesn't really matter. What really counts for them is the participation level of people. And that's exactly why I would say that not voting matters, because the regime is counting on the participation. The outcome is secondary. So obviously voting is a democratic act, but when your vote is being used for the, you know, righteously, not when it's redirected or eventually cheated. I mean, who forgot the huge cheating in 2009? I mean, how could we say that cheating is going to be marginal? How do we know that? How can we predict it? I mean, it's hard to say. I'm not saying it will happen at a very high level percentage, but how to make sure that it wouldn't happen? What guarantees do we have? Is there somebody supervising? Are there people from outside? Are there journalists? Who's going to guarantee that there are no cheatings, that the president is going to have free hands to do something? You know, like Zarif is backing Pezeshkian, right? But even during his
tenure as foreign minister,
we did, well, right, the diplomacy was different, but because Khamenei wanted it to be different as well. I mean, the margins of maneuver are very limited.
And more so than before. We'll see what happens Friday, whether there's a second round. I want to thank you, Sepideh Farsi. I want to thank as well Kian Habiban, Negar Mordazavi, for being with us from Washington, Borzu Dargahi in Istanbul. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.